All right, here we go. We're up to Parshat Miketz. Lots and lots of really, really interesting things on this week's Parsha. First of all, Parsha takes all of 9 years. We have the 7 years of plenty and 2 years of famine before Yaakov sends his sons down to Mitzrayim to try to get food. Now, the Parsha begins with 2 years after the butler is released from jail. Paro has a dream, and no one's able to interpret the dream. And then the butler says the famous words, "Et chata'ay ani maskir hayom, I recall my sins from the past. I met a guy in jail, and he's really good at dreams." Okay, and this is what we spoke about last time, saying, you know, Yosef got punished 2 years, two more years he stayed in jail, and he could have gotten out, but because he put his faith in the butler, so he was punished for two more years. But I think it's sort of weird. I mean, what does it mean? When the butler came out, what was he supposed to do? He was supposed to go to Paro and said, "Listen, Paro, I just want you to know if you ever have a dream, I know the guy. I know the guy. You just tell me you have a dream, I know the guy." Paro has a dream 2 years later, right? And the butler's right there. And he tells him, "I know a guy." So what did the butler do that we ended last week's Parsha saying, "Oh, and he forgot Yosef, and he didn't remember him"? There was nothing more to remember. When the opportunity presented itself, he said, "I know a guy," and Yosef comes out.
Maybe that's why he got punished.
But what's the punishment for? He didn't do anything wrong. The butler, at the first opportunity, tells Paro, "I know a guy who can do dreams." Paro didn't have a dream for 2 years. What was he supposed to do?
Maybe that's why Yosef got punished
another 2 years. Paro waited 2 years till he had a dream. Okay, so here's this chiddush that I once had. Okay, it's interesting. I once thought of this idea. I said it at my family table. I said, "I have a chiddush." I told them this chiddush. And then the next year, I told my family that I have this chiddush on Miketz. And I said the exact same thing. I'd forgotten that I thought of this yesterday. I'd forgotten I'd shared it with them last year. And they all started cracking up and started saying, "Obviously, said this last year." So first of all, I was really excited that my kids remembered the Dvar Torah that I said from the previous year. How many people remember, you know, what someone said a year ago? So I was very impressed. But it became a joke in my family. Anytime someone repeats themselves, they go, "Oh, it's a Chiddush on Miketz." It became like a running joke that my grandchildren already say it. They go, if like I said something, "Oh, man, it's a Chiddush on Miketz." It's like she's repeating, repeating, repeating. Anyway, I'll tell you my Chiddush, but the coolest thing is last year I found out that the Aruch Chaim says the exact same idea. So for years I've been saying this idea, and I just thought, okay, I made up this idea, and it's just something that I thought of. My kids make fun of me. But I saw that the Aruch Chaim says the same idea, so now I feel really good about the Chiddush. So here's what it says. The opening words are, here, let's get a chumash, Miketz. What does it say? Vayhi Miketz what? Good. And Vayhi Miketz Shnatayim Yamim Uparo Cholem. What is Cholem? Past, present, or future?
Is.
Present, right? Yeah. Happening. So my Chiddush was not that 2 years later Paro has a dream, but for 2 years, Paro's been having the same dream night after night. That's what Rashi tells us. He called in all the dream interpreters, all the astrologers, all every single person in all of Egypt to try to give an idea. None of them were able to give a good idea. And all this time, the butler saw Paro suffering, not getting a good interpretation. And he could have said, during all those 2 years, "I know a guy." And only after 2 years, he said, "All right, I know a guy." And that's the idea that he got punished, that Yosef was at 2 more years. Because Paro didn't have a dream 2 years later. He's been having a dream for 2 straight years. So I said this. I thought I was really proud of my Torah. My kids remembered it, which was very, very cool. But then I found last year, I marked it off in my Mikros Gedolos. I took a picture of it, sent it on the family WhatsApp. My son said, my Hebrew name is Chaim. They go, "Oh, obviously there are Chaim and Chaim say the same thing." So anyway, I was very excited that that someone else says this idea. So now you can all call the name of the Aruch Chaim. I think it's a very cool idea. Anyway, in my family, it's just known on the Chiddush and Miketz. Okay? I made fun of my daughter once when she said to my youngest daughter, because she actually probably was like a little kid when like I said this whole thing. So she just remembered Chiddush and Miketz means, oh, you know, Abba repeated himself. So I once said to her, I said, you know what the Chiddush HaMiketz is? She goes, no, not a clue. Okay, so now you guys know what the Chiddush HaMiketz is. Anyway, the dream was that you had seven fat cows swallowed up by seven skinny cows. And you had seven fat sheaves swallowed up by seven skinny sheaves. And Paro says to Yosef, I heard a lot about you. And Yosef says, it's not me. It's Hashem. He tells in the dream, and Yosef says, there will be 7 years of plenty, swallowed up immediately by 7 years of famine. And then he makes a suggestion. You need a really smart guy, wink, wink, hint, hint, to, to ration your food. And Yosef, whoa, what a great idea. Who's smarter than Yosef, right? Okay. So this is the interpretation of the dream. Rav Elchanan Samet points out, I don't know if I've ever mentioned it here, but there's a concept that's already been stated by the Rishonim, but really developed more in the 20th century Achronim, called a Milat Manche. Milat Manche is that the style of the Torah is important words are repeated in multiples of seven. So a very important word will be said seven times, or something 14 times, or 21 times. Says points out Rav Elchanan Samet, in the beginning of Miketz, the word pitaron. What's pitaron?
Solution,
explanation, the interpretation of the dream. Is mentioned seven times because in Egyptian culture, that's your fate. Whatever you dreamt, what's the explanation? Oh, that's your fate. It was a very fatalistic religion. Similarly, at the end of Parshat Vayeshev, the butler and the baker, they use the word pitaron seven times because, again, this is the culture they're in. But now Yosef says to him, I'm not the one who is interpreting, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, and the word Elokim is mentioned seven times. I'm just the shaliach. I'm the shaliach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He goes, and he's telling you to make a plan. The Jewish view is we are not fatalistic. We can forge our own destiny. That might be what it said, but it's up to us to now determine our own destiny. Right? We've mentioned in the past, you can be born under a certain star, and that shows that you have a predilection to spill blood. So you can overcome it, or you can spill blood by being a surgeon, or a moel, or a shochet, or a warrior on behalf of Am Yisrael, like David HaMelech. It doesn't necessarily mean a bad thing. I determine my destiny. It's not fatalism. Okay. Paro's amazed at Yosef and appoints him to be his viceroy with an official ceremony at the age of 30. He is given his wife, Osnat, and has his name changed to Tzafnat Paneach, which means the revealer of secrets. He puts away food during the 7 years, and during this time he also fathers two sons, Menashe and Ephraim. And now the famine hits. It hits the entire region, hits Eretz Yisrael, and Yaakov sends his sons, 10 brothers, to go to Egypt when they run out of food. They come, they bow before Yosef, and he recognizes them, but not vice versa. Why not? So Rashi says a simple thing like, oh, when he left, he didn't yet have a beard, now he has a beard. But I think it's much more obvious. As we said last week, they thought he was dead. Right? As we said, according to the Rashbam, when they got to the pit, he was missing. They actually thought he was devoured by a wild animal, as they said to Yaakov. And therefore, even if this guy reminds them of Yosef, certainly not Yosef, right? Very often, guys would come over to me, Shana Bet guys, about a Shana Aleph guy, and say, oh, right, doesn't he remind you of, you know, some guy from last year? Okay, maybe a little resemblance. I don't know. But like, he's obviously not the same guy. So they didn't think, and even if you don't want to say that they thought he was dead, who in their right mind would think we sold Yosef to be a slave? He's now the viceroy in Egypt. That's just impossible. So therefore, whichever way you want to understand the previous parsha, there's not a chance you would recognize Yosef in the position he's in. Even little things like, I don't know, let's say you see your dentist only when you go to the dental office and he's got his little white jacket and he's got his mask on and then you run into him at a bar mitzvah. So, like, you know, wow, that guy looks familiar, but I have no idea where I know him from. You know, like, you see him twice a year, and he looks familiar. It's like, it's not the right setting. They don't expect to see Yosef, and therefore they do not recognize him. He accuses them of being spies. According to the Ramban, the reason is he felt that he needs to actualize his dream. When they bow down, he says, oh, this is dream number one, where the sheaves bow down to his sheave. But now, he's got to get all 11 stars and the sun and the moon, right? So he needs to act upon this. He felt it was as if a nevuah that he needs to bring to fruition. This is the view of the Ramban. He puts them in jail for 3 days and tells them, one of you, I'll let go home, and you have to bring Binyamin here. And they refuse, fearing. Now, they refuse because what are the odds? There's nine of them there. Why is Yaakov going to say, yeah, I'll send one kid to bring back? He just wants to kill all my family. So they refuse. Fearing Yosef, fearing that the families were starved, Yosef changes the plan and says, all right, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. One will stay as a hostage, and the rest of you can go back with all the provisions for your families. And then bring Binyamin back. And they cry, and they say, this is all happening to us because of what we did to Yosef. And they then return home without Shimon, who was taken by Yosef as hostage. Now it's interesting. When he says, I need a volunteer to stay, who would you assume would stay?
Reuben.
Reuben, the oldest, right? You would assume that Reuben would say, all right, I'll stay. And yet we find the exact opposite. At this point, he starts playing the blame game. And he starts saying, I told you, this is all because of you. You know, you wanted to throw him in the pit. You wanted, no, well, since I throw him in the pit, you wanted to kill him, then you wanted to sell him. This is all happening because of you.
Do they know it's Yosef yet, though?
They have no idea it's Yosef.
So why is everything about...
So good. I'm going to get to that in a second. In 22 years, they didn't do anything wrong except for that. It's a little bit weird, right? But I find it interesting that Reuven is playing the blame game as opposed to who? Yehuda. Yehuda is later on. We'll get to Vayigash. Says to the viceroy, don't take Binyamin, take me instead. And this is why Yehuda is going to be given the mantle of leadership. Throughout all of Jewish history, who's going to be the leader? Shevet Yehuda. And it happens over here in this parasha. Reuven could have been, he's the firstborn. What does he do? It's your fault. Takes no responsibility whatsoever, it's all your fault. And Yehuda steps up when someone needs to, and we'll see even in our parasha. But, as Benny asks, a bigger question. 22 years went by. Right? They sat in jail for 3 days. 22 years go by, and the only thing they can think of is that they did something to Yosef, and that's why this is happening. I mean, you could say they were such tzaddikim, it was the only sin they ever did. Okay. Possibly. But I'll tell you a few ideas. The Abarbanel says, up until now, they looked at this viceroy, Tzafnas Panach, and said, okay, this guy's just evil. I mean, what did we do wrong? We came in to buy food. He accuses us of being spies. What the heck does that mean? We're spies. He took us. He threw us in jail. He's holding us hostage. He's saying, bring our other brother. This guy's evil. But all of a sudden, they see, well, 1 second. He's now saying, all of you can go back except for one. You take all your provisions, bring it back to the family. They go, wow, he's actually treating us better than we treated our own brother. One suggestion of the Abarbanel. Second suggestion of the Abarbanel. They start to cry because they say, oh my gosh, he assumes as long as he's holding Shimon hostage, we'll of course be back. Why would we be back? Because no brothers would abandon their brother. Uh-oh. If he only knew what we did to Yosef, he would never trust us to come back for Shimon because we already have a history of not caring about our brother. And that's what made him start to think about it. Third idea is it's now going to be the second time they come back to their father minus one brother. So it deja vu, and that made them think. This is Wally Barbanel, all good, but I got to tell you my favorite idea. Such a cool idea. Rav Yaakov Medan says this idea. It was worth coming tonight just to hear this cool idea. You ready, Matan? Such a cool idea. Rav Yaakov Medan, Rosh Hashiva and Gush, says beautiful idea. Yosef took the brothers and interrogated them all in different rooms. Okay? They're not being interrogated together. They're all in different rooms. And he's asking them questions. They're all giving the same answers. We have one father. There were 12 sons. 10 of us came down. 2 are not here. All right. Everyone gave the same story. What were the other sons? Everyone said, Binyamin is back taking care of dad. Good. And what about the other son that you mentioned? What's his name? Yosef? Where is he? And now each brother was like, and one guy said, he died. Traffic accident. The guy said, oh, I don't... He like moved away. He's living in Argentina. He couldn't come with us now. But like, everyone made up a different story. And when they got back to the cell, they started talking. What did you... Oh! And now they realize, this is why he's holding us hot. Because we lied. He caught us in a lie. Because they weren't ready for that question. Isn't that a great answer? And that's why now, 22 years later, it's because of what we did to Yosef. Because now they got caught in the lie, what they did to Yosef. I think it's such a cool thing, maybe it's because I watched too many movies. But anyway, I think it's a great answer. Now, why didn't Yosef just tell them who he was? You know, they come in, they bow down. Yo, guys, it's all good. Look, it's me. Here, no beard. Look, I'm covering it up. It's like, it's me, Yosef. Why didn't you do that? So Nechama Leibowitz, who I had the schus to learn from for 3 years, I have a star on the back, mostly based on the Abarah Benel, says this idea. Yosef wanted to reunite the family. This family is fractured. There are problems between Yosef and his brothers, between the brothers and their father. And Yosef wants to bring the family together. And he has a plan. He needs to mend 3 different relationships. Relationship number 1, and this is the easiest. He needs the brothers to change their opinion of him. And when they realize that Yosef is not a threat, but rather he is there to provide a salvation for the family, they will easily, quickly change their view that the dreams weren't meant that Yosef would lord it over them, but he's going to provide for the family. Could very well be that Yosef didn't understand what the dreams meant when he was a 17-year-old pisher. He also thought like them. He was going to rule over them. And only now he realizes he's a shaliach Hashem to provide for the family. So that's the easiest to mend. And whenever he decides to tell them who he is and how he can save them, that's going to end. He needs to see that they've changed. Now, what is the definition of tshuva gemura?
When something happens, you change the opposite.
Exact same scenario, and you don't do it. So what does he do? He now creates a situation for tshuva gemura. There is now a new favorite son. What's the new favorite son? Who's the new favorite son? Binyamin. Binyamin, as we will see, is already 30 years old. He's not some little kid that couldn't go on the trip. He's got 10 children of his own. When they sent down the brothers to go and bring back food, why did Binyamin go? Why, he couldn't go down? None of the grandchildren could have taken care of Yaakov? Binyamin had to stay? It's clear Yosef sees that Yaakov's got a new favorite, and he's not sending Binyamin on any trips because something might happen to his beloved son of Rachel. Right? So Binyamin is staying home where he's safe. Yes?
Yeah, it's pretty funny that Yaakov acts the same way with Binyamin.
Right? So he realizes that there's probably some jealousy now between the brothers and Binyamin. So, listen to this beautiful plan. Clay Yakar says, what's the need to accuse him of being spies? It's sort of a weird accusation. He could have easily said, oh, you're trying to buy up all the produce to make a monopoly and something else. But spies? What? It came in there, spies? What does that mean? This is all part of the plan. He wants to eventually send them back, right? But he doesn't want them to know who he is. He needs to keep his identity hidden. When you accuse them of being spies, what could he assure they will not do? On their way out, start stopping people. Who's that guy? That viceroy. Because then he's trying to get information. You're spying. Because if he would ask, people go, you didn't hear the crazy story? The rags to riches slave in jail became viceroy overnight because of dreams? And also they'll put 2 and 2 together. I thought he looked familiar. But since he accused them of spies, they can't talk to anybody. All part of the plan. He doesn't want his identity to be known. So that's part one. Part two, another inexplicable part of Yosef's When you read the story, you go, what's this all about? But now it makes sense. The first time he's sent back, what does Yosef do? He puts all sorts of money in their bags. So much so when they open up, they freak out. They get back and they tell Yaakov, Yaakov freaks out. When they finally do come back, they bring back the money. And they say to Yosef's attendant, according to Chazal, Menashe, his son, I don't know what happened. There must have been a mix-up. All this money was given to us. We want to return. He goes, no, 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 it's yours. Your God must have given it to you. And they don't know what's going on. And we don't know what's going on. But according to Nechama, it makes so much sense. Why? Because what's the plan? We know what's going to happen at the end of this parsha. He's going to plant a goblet. The big coast, the Gavia, in the sack of Binyamin. Had he never planted money in their bags before, what might the brothers actually think happened? Binyamin stole the goblet. I mean, it runs in the family after all. Didn't Rachel steal the trophim from Laban? They're kleptomaniacs. It runs in the family. So they might have thrown Binyamin under the bus. What did he do? He created a situation where they would realize it's that crazy guy playing mind games with us again. He did it once before when he stacked all of our bags with money. He's doing it again. Because what do they want? They want them. He wants the brothers to stand up for Binyamin, to overcome the jealousy, to do tshuva gemura. Had he not done that planting in the first scene, they might have turned on Binyamin, which is so not what he wants to happen. So he planted the money. I never understood this before. I was like, what? Whatever came of that? Such a weird thing. We read about it. They come back. All cause anxiety. But according to this, it makes so much sense. The whole idea was that the brothers should have the opportunity to stand up for the family. He wants them, it's not just for him, that they should realize themselves, I'm a different person. Earlier, 22 years earlier, I would have thrown my brother under the bus, but not anymore. And they stand up for their brother. So that now Yosef realizes they changed, and the brothers realize they changed. And step three, he needs to change the relationship between Yaakov and the brothers. Who's Yaakov's favorite son? Binyamin. Who's Yaakov's least favorite son? Probably Shimon and Levi, who disrespected him, disagreed with him, went and killed Shechem, and he had to reprimand them for it. So I have a choice. I'm Yaakov Avinu. I have one last son from my beloved family of Rachel. Rachel's dead. Yosef's dead. Binyamin's my one son. I have my least favorite son from Leah, and there's plenty more. And I could trade Binyamin for Shimon. I don't really want to do it. And the brothers see that. And he eventually does do it. And when the brothers see Yaakov do it, they say, okay. I was overcome this favoritism. And that also needed to be mended. So according to Nechama Leibowitz, that was the plan. That all the relationships are mended. You guys like that? Now listen. All the questions fall by the wayside if we accept this one premise of Rav Yoel ben Nun. Rav Yoel ben Nun, it's a modern Rav who gives all these very interesting shiurim. I've heard shiurim by him. He has this amazing insight, worth coming just to hear this insight. Okay? What bothers us? Yosef was a slave, fine. He didn't contact his father all while he was a slave. Maybe he couldn't. But for how many years has he now been the viceroy in Egypt? How many years? Nine. Seven of plenty, two of famine. You have all these people that work for you. You can't send a message to Yaakov and say, yo, dad, I'm doing well. Love to see you. I'll send plane tickets. You can travel first class. I can't leave because I got jobs too, but I'll fly you in. Why didn't Yosef ever get in touch with his father? This is a question that bothers lots of Rishonim. The Ramban, which is many people find difficult, is it's all part of his plan to actualize his dreams. He needs the sun and the moon to bow down also. Okay. A lot of people don't like that. They say, well, you can make your father bow down to you, he had a dream. People don't necessarily like that idea. Here's Rav Yoel ben Nun's amazing idea. Our problem is we read the Parsha and we get to read all the psukim from the view of the narrator who's telling the story. The narrator is God. He fills us in on everything. But read the story from the eyes of Yosef. And nothing is ever a problem now. Think of it. I'm Yosef. I came fulfilling my father's mission to try to find my brothers. They see me. They strip my coat off of me. They throw me in a pit. And they leave me. I'm screaming, save me, take me out of here. No one listens. And then comes along who? These Midianim. And they pull me out of the pit. And I get sold over to the Ishmaelim. And they spring me down to Egypt. And now I'm bought by Potiphar and I'm a slave in Potiphar's house. Now I know my father Yaakov, he's a wealthy man. And he probably has search parties out there looking for me. So I'm not going to be slave for long. You know, there's obviously a misunderstanding. My brothers probably went running home, told Abba, saying, Yosef's gone, you know, and Yaakov's hiring anyone he can to look for Yosef. And he says it won't be a long time, but days turn into weeks, and weeks turn into months. Then Yosef starts to think, this is so strange. What happened? And then it hits him. This is all a setup by Yaakov. Yaakov realized that there was sibling rivalry. And as we once said before, in all of Sefer Bereishis, had a sibling rivalry end? Either in death or separation. And right now, Yosef says to himself, there's 11 of them and one of me. And let's say take Binyamin out of the picture, 10 of them and one of me. And there's one living wife named Leah. And she's saying, she has Yaakov's ear. You're really going to let one guy mess up all these kids? And Yaakov finally realized they can't all stay together. I'll have to get rid of Yosef to keep the family together. I'll sacrifice one for the good of the many. And he realizes that's exactly what happened. Yaakov sent them. Who would send the hated brother to go check on the brothers off in Shechem? Does he not know they hate me? I said the dream in front of them. Yaakov even said, what are you doing? Why are you saying this? So he knows they hate me. And he says, oh, do me a favor. Go see Lashon Hara on your brothers. Go spy on your brothers. This was a setup. He sent me right to them. This is all part of the plan. And therefore, Yosef, he gives up. Not on God, but on his family. He gives up on his family. And you see it. When you see who's his first oldest son? What's his oldest son's name? Menashe. Why? He says the name means, let me forget my father's home. That's what it says in the Pasuk. Let me forget my father's home. Because it was my father, he got rid of me. I just spent 13 years as a slave or in jail. I'm out. I still love God. Not my family. And then what happens? He's shocked when his brothers show up in Egypt. He sees them. He remembers his dreams. And he needs to find out what really happened. Who's the only person in the whole family he can trust? Binyamin. And therefore, he plots to get Binyamin here. Because Binyamin will be able to tell him what's really going on. So his plan is, get me Binyamin. And then I'll know what really happened. But he never was able to get to Binyamin. His plan fails because at the beginning of the Yigash, Yehuda says such a passionate speech that Yosef just breaks down and like says, all right. And he gives in. He tells identity. But originally his plan was, I'll take Binyamin. I'll start our own branch of, you know, the legacy from Avraham Avinu through me and Binyamin, from the kids of Rachel. That was the original plan. And Yehuda, because of his speech, changes Jewish history. This is Rabbi Yoel ben Nun's idea. I think it's a fascinating idea. If you just view it from the eyes of Yosef, not us. We're so used to reading all the Pesukim. We know exactly what happened. We know that Yaakov's mourning. Yaakov can't be consoled. Yosef doesn't know that. And Yosef conjures up in his image that the mastermind of this whole plot was Yaakov Avinu. Maybe it was his evil wife Leah putting thoughts in his mind. But Yaakov's the one that put the plan into action, and that's why he never contacts Yaakov. Very interesting way of looking at it, no? Okay? Very interesting. I'm not saying you have to accept it, but it would be difficult to read the Pesukim again and not think of this. Ever since I saw it, I always think of this when I'm going through the Pesukim. It's a very fascinating way of looking at it. Yes?
When he sees again the brother, change his mind. He wants to test them. Before.
Now he wants to get Binyamin to try to find it from him what's really going on. And he was going to basically send them all back and keep Binyamin. That's why he planted the goblet. But then Yehuda made him change his mind, and Jewish history changes. But he originally thought, I've been abandoned. I'll start all over with my brother. Now, as mentioned, he sends them home with money and bags, and Yaakov refuses at first to send Binyamin. Even though Reuven tries to persuade him, when the famine worsens, Yehuda succeeds. They come back with gifts from Yaakov. Interesting, Yaakov gives him delicacies that can only be found in Israel. And it's pointed out, the Dat Mikra points out in the footnotes, the same things that Yaakov gives as a gift down to Egypt were the exact same things that were in the caravan that took Yosef down 22 years earlier. It's interesting. It's not as if Yaakov knew. But in the Dat Mikra, in the Chumash Dat Mikra, in the footnotes, it points out, look at the things that were sent, the exact same things that were said in the caravan that when Yosef was sent back down. Interesting idea. The Sforno points out that that was pointed out by the Sforno. Okay, then they tell the officials about the money, and he says, forget about it. Okay. They meet Yosef, they bring gifts from the home, he inquires about dad, and then he leaves the room to cry, seeing Binyamin, everyone together, is a little emotional for him. Yosef cries more like anyone in Chumash. He's always going out and crying. He makes a big banquet and seats them all in age order. We'll come back to this next time. He gives out gifts. Now he tells the servants to plant the royal goblet in the bag of Binyamin. According to the Chizkuni, an interesting idea, the Chizkuni says he wanted to see if they brought an imposter. Maybe it's not Binyamin. He hasn't seen Binyamin in 22 years. When he left, Binyamin was all of 9 years old. You know, 8 years old. Can't really tell an 8-year-old and a 30-year-old. So he said, all I know, they took an imposter and said, tell him you're Binyamin. And Binyamin didn't really come. So he wanted to test them. If they would abandon Binyamin right away, yeah, keep him. And you know that, okay, for sure he's not Binyamin. You know, so there's all part of the plan according to Chizkuni, and they see them now standing up for him. After they leave, he pursues them, he accuses them, he searches, makes it look official, starts from the oldest down to the youngest, and finds the goblin in Binyamin's sack. They cry, they petition, they say, we're one family, take us all. He says, Chas v'shalom. Only the one who I found the goblet in his sack, that's the person I'm going to take as a slave. The similarities between Yosef chasing after the brothers and Lavan chasing after Yaakov are so striking. These brothers, they were little kids at the time, but it's sort of like deja vu all over again. What happens? Twice a person runs after and said, you were ingrateful. I was so good to you. Why were you ungrateful? What did Lavan say? You stole my trefillin. What does Paro say? You stole my goblet. Both times, one of the leaders gives an impassioned speech. There, it was Yaakov saying, how dare you accuse me? I worked for you so loyally, no one would steal from you. And over here, you have Yehuda giving an impassioned speech. No one would ever do it. The only difference is, there, Rachel actually stole and wasn't caught. Here, Binyamin never stole and is actually caught. But other than that, the similarities are striking, and we'll pick it up at this point of suspense. Parsha ends at this point of suspense. And we have to wait till next time, which we're lucky. We got our teal canceled, so we will have it already next class this week. We will finish up and carry on. Same bat time, same bat channel. Okay. Shkayach.